Like all good stories, this one starts with a girl. And this girl was my girlfriend in college. Her name was Kyla. And we met together in a soils class, and we had a great time, and then we graduated. And like most of my male friends, I was pretty clueless, didn't know what I wanted to do. I had a summer job as a botanist, and then question marks. And she had a summer job as a park ranger, but then she knew exactly what she wanted to do, and that was to go traveling around the world. Now, I was a California boy, and I was under the assumption that I'm in California, which is, you know, in the best state in our country, and our country was the best country in the world, and our world was the best world as I knew it, so why go anywhere else? But she was like, no, she'd been to Turkey and Central America and Europe, and she spoke languages, and she's like, no, this is our time to go. And so I said, okay, you know, I'm in. We worked for a while. We saved up all our money, $2,000 round the world ticket. And I was blissfully enjoying my time until I got this ticket in my hand. And I looked at it, and I saw the words Denpasar, Johor Bahru, Kuching, Kota Kinabalu. And I thought, not only can I not find these places on a map, I've never heard of them before in my entire life. I mean, I thought I was literally might have to dodge bullets as we exited the plane in some of these places. I had no idea where we were going. And I thought, and she said, oh, it'll be great, it'll be great. And I was like, I was pretty frightened, to be honest. But the trip went well. And our goal fairly early in the trip was to go to the Philippines to visit her best friend who was working in the Peace Corps. So we flew into Manila, and we got a small plane to the very, very northern tip of the Philippines, and that's a place called Batanes. It's an island, three islands smack between Taiwan and Luzon. And there's Peace Corps volunteers there. And we had a great time, spent about 5 days there. It was tropical paradise, very calm. And then there was the matter of flying back, and the reservation was to fly, spend about 5 days there and fly back, but there was a mix-up, and so only two seats were reserved, and one of them was for the Peace Corps friend. She was thinking, well, yeah, me and Kyler are going to cruise around, and you know, I don't know what you're going to do. And so there was no ticket for me, and the next available ticket was in a month, and we had a flight in 2 weeks to somewhere else. And so I could either take a two-day boat trip in this horrendously tumultuous strait on some fishing cargo boat, or you know, be stuck on the Batanes Islands for who knows how long by myself. But, you know, so I expressed some frustration, some tears maybe, and then eventually what happened was the next day they're like, there's a room for you on this flight. So I don't know who bribed who. I don't know how whatever happened behind the scenes. But here I was on this flight out of there. And so we flew. And I do have a fear of flying. And Kyla would help me with that. I had Xanax. But I'd run out of Xanax. And Kyla wasn't there. And so fortunately there was another volunteer that was from California. And she flew. And we took this 11-hour bus trip. And we ended up at the Pension Natividad, which is the little hotel where all the Peace Corps volunteers go when they go into Manila. And so it was like a hub of Western, and I thought, oh, yeah, I could talk to people, and it was great. And I thought, at that point, I had two options. I could either stay there for a week and wait for Kyla and Christy to get there and then continue on, or I could go somewhere on an adventure by myself, alone. And so I didn't sleep that whole night, and then what was driving me was this image of this place called the Chocolate Hills. You've seen postcards all around. It's 1,000 hills. There are old coral atolls, and the center part is limestone the outside of the coral got washed away. So it leaves these perfectly round mounds that have a thin layer of grass that grows on them. The soil's not nutrient rich, and then they dry out pretty quick and stay brown for most of the year, hence the name of the Chocolate Hills. Very beautiful. But it happened to be on an island called Bohol, which is in central Philippines. So I had to either take a 18-hour ferry or a 1-hour flight to get there. Next morning I found myself, and it was my mind was like, I don't know what to do, but here I am, my body's on a taxi going to the airport. And I got to the airport, I bought my ticket and waited, and I got a flight on Cebu Airlines. And there was a couple of challenges. Number one, there was an incoming typhoon. Number two, and I don't know if it was a result of the incoming typhoon or it was the strategic flying patterns of the pilots, but when the plane took off, it didn't go, you know, nicely. It went straight. I mean, I felt like I was on a rocket ship going straight up. And I didn't have Xanax. I didn't have. And the only thing I had was my dad made me this Manhattan is this cocktail. He put in a little water bottle. This is pre-9/11. He's like, take this. So I was madly sipping alcohol, and I was throwing water in my face and freaking out. And there's this guy next to me, this Filipino guy, can barely speak English, and he's looking at me. Like, at first he's like, you know, and then finally he's looking at me, this guy's a freak. And he finally, I remember he basically calmed me down. I had a picture of people back in California. I ended up finding myself showing him pictures of people in California. It's very nice, smiling. And he really kind of helped me get over it and these massive turbulence of this typhoon that was coming in until we finally made it to Cebu. Well, then I had about 4 taxi rides and 3 boat rides to finally get to Bohol and get to the Chocolate Hills. And I'm driving up the driveway and this bus, and I'm 10-minute walk, and I finally get to look out at these beautiful Chocolate Hills, which, for lack of a better image, look like bosoms coming up out of endless as the eye can see, perfectly round and smooth. And I sat there in this sort of blissful state of like, wow, I'm all by myself, and look at these Chocolate Hills. And that lasted for about 50 seconds, and then a boat full of French tourists came roaring up, and they were loud, and everything kind of went away. And then I was finally left with this sense of, what's next? What do I do now? I got here, I had 50 seconds of pure joy, and now what? I'm stuck in who knows where with nobody I know. And right as I was thinking that, this motorcycle drives up, and this guy's like, hey, do you want a tour of Bohol? I'll take you on a tour of Bohol. And I was like, you know, I thought he was kind of gathering people together. He'd take a bus ride. And at that point, I was like, yeah, I'll do it. He's like, all right, great. Jump on. And he has this motorcycle. And I'm like, at first, I was like, I'm kind of scared. And he's like, oh, it's okay. And I'm like, well, where's you don't have another helmet. He takes off his helmet. He's like, here you go. And I'm like, all right, you know, what's the tour? He's like, well, we got a national park, and we got this place where in the 1800s, these guys cut open each other's hands and traded blood for this peace treaty. We'll go there, and we'll go to this place and some, you know, factory where they make quilts or something. And I was like, okay, I'll do it. And, and also a tour of where they filmed Apocalypse Now. And that was what was really striking me about Bohol. I was like, I feel like I'm in Vietnam. I feel like I'm in Vietnam. And it's because they film all the Vietnam movies on this island of Bohol, apparently. Well, he drops me off at about 1 p.m. at this nature reserve. And there's a Peace Corps conference in the main start. So on the very far end of it, there's a little hut that's available. And there's just this one guy. He's probably like 60 years old, very indigenous, sharp, angled face, barely speaks English. And so he dropped me off there, and he shows me this little hut. He's like, this is where you're going to stay. And it's literally palm fronds, like, kind of leaned up against each other with, like, this cot. And I said, okay. You know, I'm like, well, I need to find a place. Is there a restaurant near here? And he goes, oh, no, no, no restaurant. Is there a place to buy water? Oh, no, 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 no water. And then he turns away and walks away. And I think, okay, there's nowhere to. So the long story short is that about an hour later, he comes back with a big plate of noodles and some eggs and some meatloaf kind of thing. And he proceeds to feed me dinner that night and give me water. And the next morning, and I had a very restful night of sleep in this hut. And the next morning, the guy on the motorcycle, John, shows up, and he takes me around these different places. But he finally takes me to this bridge, which was in Apocalypse Now, that 60-foot-tall bridge. And he's like, yeah, you got to jump off. It's great. And it sounded great. And it was great. And I was like, oh, got to the bridge. I'm walking on it. And he's like, I'll take a picture of you. And I realize as I'm on top of this bridge that all I have with me at this point is my shorts. And there's a guy on a motorcycle next to his motorcycle with my camera and all my other belongings and wallet and everything else. And he's got his pictures. I'm going to get a picture of you. And at that moment, it kind of clicked. And I'm like, holy shit, like, what am I doing here? Like, am I jumping 60 feet into 2 feet of water? Like, what's going on here? I looked down, and I really thought, like, I'm at the poker table, and I've been bluffing and bluffing and bluffing, and, like, finally it's like, all right. What my option was like, hey, I'm too scared. I'm not going to do this. Let's go. And I realized, like, that could have been one way, but I was like, all right, you know, I came for the adventure. So I took a deep breath, and I noticed there was 2 kids playing, and they weren't, they're like, oh, they weren't looking. They were still kind of playing with themselves. They weren't looking at like an upcoming train wreck, which sort of calmed me a little bit. And so I took one step off and jumped down into this this river. And I remember sinking all the way down and feeling nothing and then popping back up. And I looked over at John and he's like this. He's like, I got a good one. And at that moment, this huge wave of fear that I was unconscious that I was carrying with me just left. And I realized that I'd been carrying this sort of fear like that when I got that plane ticket that, you know, the world is a scary place. People are going to try to get you. People are going to try to hurt you. They're going to steal. And exactly the opposite happened. This old man in the hut gave me food. This man he could have stole all my stuff, and yet he showed me a really cool adventure. And then this guy on the plane that had never met me offered me, I was very vulnerable, and he offered me, you know, some care. And so ever since that time, I've felt like a sense that people are generally good. And I really owe that to that whole experience of just stepping in off that bridge and coming out alive.